The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Cochran, Judge Brian, Judge Gaitis, the Honorable Judge Jean M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. For purposes of the recording, today is April 14th, 2022. We have five cases on our calendar today, three oral cases and two non-oral cases. First case on our calendar today is In Re Welfare of the Children of DLW. We are proceeding by Zoom. As you know, the normal rules apply. Each party will have 15 minutes for their primary argument and appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Just to anyone who's observing, we are recording the oral argument and it will be available on our website, but no other recordings are permitted except with the express prior permission of the Court of Appeals. So with that, I'll ask each attorney to introduce yourself at the beginning of your argument and the party you represent. And appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Your Honors, counsel, good morning. My name is Rhea Bornman Spears, and I am here on behalf of appellant grandmother, Khadijah Harden. We're asking this court to reverse the district court's rule out so that grandmother can move forward and execute the statutory right of challenging the department's adoption of her grandchildren. I hesitated, but I took this case pro bono because I wanted to be here before you to let you know what Hennepin County is doing to circumvent the case law and procedures in place to protect foster children and their rights that are outlined in the statute about preference to be adopted by their relatives. It's especially an issue when it comes to African American families. The children in this case have been placed with two white stranger or non-relative families since being removed from their grandmother. If this court doesn't reverse the rule out of the district court, she will not be allowed to challenge the adoption and never get the chance to access the evidence and prove that the department was unreasonable in removing her grandchildren. Through this case, Hennepin County has made a new practice in juvenile court of narrowing the language about intervention as a matter of right that will exclude grandparents who are meant to be included. Hennepin County wants to take the easy route of ruling out relatives during the same 30-day window in which they would have a right to challenge the adoptive placement with clear procedures, prima facie findings, discovery exchange, precedent, and outlined plan in statute 260C. I would like this court to know that this grandmother who I represent was repeatedly given the stamp of approval as the pre-adoptive placement for her grandchildren by the guardian ad litem, the county social worker, and the court from early in 2018 all the way to 2020. What changed in this case is notable. It was a social worker. She is the same social worker who the department relied on to support the rule out. She came on to the case and suddenly grandmother was being blamed for decisions that were made and or approved by the prior social worker 1 and 2 years before. A key argument we make is that if we had been allowed to intervene and become a party in this process, as we believe the statute provides for, we would have had the discovery, which I have now seen, to fight these allegations.
Counsel, I have a few questions for you about your argument on the motion to intervene. In terms of the rule, which provides, that's at issue 34.01, that provides any grandparent of a child shall have the right to intervene as a party if the child has lived with the grandparent within the 2 years preceding the filing of the petition. The district court interpreted the term the petition in this case to be the CHIPS petition. And the That's what the county argues. So in your view, which petition is the proper petition to be considered and why?
In my view, it's both. The statute doesn't differentiate. The statute doesn't say the CHIPS petition. It doesn't say the TPR petition. So in the process of these cases, children could live with grandparents before a TPR is opened. They could live with grandparents before a CHIPS case is open. Sometimes, especially in these African American communities, the children will have been in and out of grandparents' houses before the case rises to the level of the county intervening and filing a CHIPS petition. So that is common. But we also have a scenario where placement with grandmother, in this case specifically, happened before the TPR petition. And that's because one of the children was placed with her immediately from ICU after birth, the other one at less than 2 years. So I'll stop there, Your Honor, if you feel I've answered your question.
I think so. Just, I guess, in looking at this case in particular and the facts of this case, at the time the petition was filed, the CHIPS determination had been made and there was already a TPR petition. So given that, it looks to me, based on the records we have on appeal, that the TPR file was the one that was open at the time the petition was filed. Is that consistent with your understanding?
So I need somewhat clarification of what you're asking, but maybe it'll come out in my answer. Which is that at the time that her granddaughter was placed with her, for example, no TPR petition had been filed. The child had just been born. And so they decided to place that child with her prior to the termination petition. And there's also the ambiguity of, whether it's before the petition is granted, before the petition, so I hope that answers your question, Your
Honor. Okay. Well, I just have one more follow-up, and maybe this will clarify things a bit. But when grandmother filed the motion to intervene, what proceeding was she seeking to intervene in?
She was seeking to intervene in the case in general. And that's because either one of the cases would have allowed her to file motions in asking the court for certain things. So by the time she asked to intervene with myself, I believe she had an intervention denied prior, but by the time she and I asked to intervene, the TPR had already happened. But the statute, of course, doesn't clarify that you have to ask to intervene before the filing of the petition, just that they would have had to have lived with grandmother before the petition.
Thank you for that clarification. And then in terms of the prejudice, can you expand a little bit on how you believe she was prejudiced in terms of discovery?
Yes. So the county will argue that, the grandparents still get to come. They still get to be in the Zoom hearing. They can raise their hand and talk to the judge, but it's not the same as being able to file a motion, which is something that can therefore require a matter to be heard, because sometimes these hearings are scheduled for 15 minutes. If you don't get to file a motion in advance and make requests of the court, you're probably not going to be heard. Most importantly, and in this case, what mattered is discovery. If she had been allowed to intervene as a party, she would have had an open door to all of the things filed by the social worker throughout the process for the judge, and to the communications and the inner workings, essentially, of what goes on with the county and these kids. So, for example, when one of the children didn't have their medical needs met by the county, one of our examples, I believe, was the fact that one of the kids had a seizure. The county didn't share that information with Ms. Hardin. if she had been a party, she would have been made aware of it because the county has to let the court know, and they would have had to share that information with her. And then she could have offered the helpful information of, well, you know, he's got an uncle or a relative that has seizures, and here's his medical information, which would have been helpful. So discovery, discovery, discovery. And in this case, the allegations made against Ms. Harden were things that had occurred several years prior under a different social worker. And really important to remember is that the social worker and the county are the custodial providers, and they have to see the child by law once a month to make sure all services are in place and all needs are met. So if we had, you can just tell by knowing that fact that there's information out there in the discovery to verify that the social worker monitored the services and therefore approved the changes in services that grandmother made, that the new social worker who came in years later went back and said weren't approved. So we could have disproved the allegations that came out years later if we'd had access to the files about what the goings on at the time that the supposed...
Ms. Borman Spears, if I could follow up on this, do non-party individuals have a right to cross-examine witnesses at hearings?
So that's a great question, because to be honest, we don't know. In this case, in the rule-out hearing, the judge allowed it.
Okay.
But there's no clear guideline. There's no clear direction to tell us what we get to do and what'll happen.
So I guess then the follow-up for me is, it looks like this judge was willing to allow a non-party to do things that aren't explicitly permitted by the rules, like cross-examine witnesses. And so when I'm looking at the prejudice question, I'm wondering, not just in theory, kind of what could have been different, but in particular to this case, was there a request to conduct discovery made?
So I just want to clarify one thing you mentioned too in your question. You said that the judge allowed the non-party to do certain things. She actually asked the county if they would object to it or not. So we were allowed to make those moves by agreement. And of course, we believe that the county strategically agreed that we could take those steps because they wanted to get the most legitimacy.
But I think I don't want to cut you off, but I want to make sure we have time to get through all these questions that I'm sure there are others. So whether it's by agreement or overruling an objection from the county, the question is still the same. Was there a request to do discovery?
So we do not have a right for discovery. And based on my experience, obviously with multiple cases and whatnot, the county will not give it to you until you have a right to it. And the statute provides a right.
I'm looking at where in the record does it show that there was a discovery request, or was there no request? That's my question.
No request, because I knew that I didn't have a right to it. Do you want to follow that up, Your Honor, or should I proceed with my additional points?
I don't have any other follow-up on prejudice. I think that the other questions and answers you've provided are sufficient on the issue, for me at least, of what the rule covers and what petition means. So I'm all done.
All right, thank you, Your Honor. I would like this court to strongly consider the issue of when a rule out is untimely. So we broke, of course, our response up into two parts of asking you first to consider that question, because, again, I took it.
Yes? I think that argument was raised for the first time in your reply brief. Can you correct me if I'm wrong? I don't recall seeing it in your principal brief.
So we were certainly intending to get that message across, but I do feel like we more strongly asserted it in the reply than in the original part. Because, of course, in the first brief, we are complaining, so to speak, that they were untimely and they were unfair and it shouldn't be allowed to go through this rule out process because it's not due process and the procedures aren't laid out, etc. But yes, I did want the court to strongly consider, you know, with the facts of this case and with the consideration for the future cases, because it's only merely mentioned in the statute, as we reference in our reply, that ruling out a relative is part of this process. It does not compare to the details and the guidance we have from case law and statutes about the motion for adoptive placement process. And we think it was, of course, an abuse of discretion for the judge to allow this rule out to go forward, knowing that my client was served with the notice of adoptive placement and knowing that 30-day window was open and closing soon.
Counsel, you make a due process argument in your principal brief. Did you make that argument before the district court?
We did, with the argument and point that she is not going to get a chance to, essentially, we told the court, we have this one email. We brought up one of the emails that they had accidentally left behind at my client's house. And that email was very revealing. And that's the kind of information we would have gotten with the discovery process. So we tried to get the court to recognize the value of that in revealing what else we might find if we were allowed to be a party and have discovery.
Did you use the phrase due process before the district court?
Knowing myself, probably not, Your Honor. We would have saved that for written documents versus having said that to the court at the time. I would have argued why it wasn't due process, but not said, so to speak.
Okay, thank you. Your time is up, but I do have one further question for you, and then I'll see if any of the other panel members have any questions for you before we turn to Ms. Lynch. In terms of the best interest issue, is there any case law that you can point us to that would require the district court to specifically and expressly analyze each of the best interest factors in 260C.212 in addressing a rule out motion?
That's a great point, Your Honor. My answer would be yes and no. So the no is that, the place where rule out is mentioned, there isn't really clear direction. But throughout the statute and throughout the rules that control these proceedings and the practices of adopting children out, everywhere says that the court must consider the best interests of the child and that those are to be paramount. And so we believe the fact that that's woven through everywhere else and all decisions that it applies in this situation as well.
Thank you. Any other questions from the panel at this point? You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel, my name is Mary Lynch with the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, representing Hennepin County Human Services and Public Health Department. I intend primarily to discuss the rule out issue. I don't intend to waive any other issues and of course would be happy to respond to the court's questions. This case, to a somewhat extent, presents the issue of whether or not a rule out has any meaning. And it is the department's contention, as argued in our brief, that a rule out does have meaning. The procedures, the primary case here is the 2018 case of this court of JLG, which makes it clear that the district court, in its role as oversight role regarding adoption proceedings or really guardianship review proceedings regarding progress towards adoption, that the court has specific and the agency has specific duties, focusing in part on the need and the statutory values of prioritizing placement with relatives. However, there is the process. There is a reference in the guardianship review statute to rule out, and JLG makes clear that a rule out means that a relative who is not going to be considered for placement in the adoption review process or the guardianship review process, excuse me. That review focuses on that permanency, that move towards adoption. That in order for a rule out to be acceptable, that the relative must have a fair opportunity to be heard, and that is where the due process analysis is. It's our contention that the district court here did that. There was an evidentiary hearing that came up. There was a review hearing set, as Ms. Borman Spears indicates. There was opportunity, that was, I believe, in May of 2021. There was an opportunity for the parties to present, for the participants to present motions. Ms. Borman Spears and her client did that. There was a hearing in mid-July of 2021 where there were agreed upon procedures. There was discussion about what the evidentiary hearing would look like. There was a written affidavit submitted by both the county and by the relative, Ms. Borman Spears' client. And then there were also written arguments, and there was an evidentiary hearing at which the district court had the opportunity to see both one of the social workers as well as appellant testify.
Ms. Lynch, if I could jump in before we get to what happened at the hearing, I want to focus on what happened before. Was there any discovery permitted?
There was no discovery request. So no, there was not, as far as I'm aware, there was not discovery. There was, however, no request. There was a specific discussion at the July 15th hearing. Judge Sheehy asked counsel what counsel would like to see happen. And there was a discussion about what evidence would be presented.
Ms. Lynch, I do think it's difficult to discuss the rule out issue without addressing the intervention issue. And so I would like to talk about that a little bit. I'm wondering if in the rule there is any textual support for your argument that the petition can only refer to the CHIPS petition.
The rule of juvenile protection procedure, Your Honor. In the text, in the plain text, it is our contention that in the text itself, we need to look a little bit beyond that. I do believe that it has to do with how the county finds the family, and the text itself refers to the petition that refers to before a placement happens, before the county has any placing authority, to assure that the county has a duty to connect up and make sure that the right folks are part of the court case from the beginning.
So, Ms. Lynch, if I can jump in, what was the case number that in which the motion to intervene was filed?
The motion to intervene, I believe, was filed in the TPR petition number, but I don't have that in front of me.
So if we go back and look at the documents that are part of our record, and the motion to intervene is in fact filed in case number 27-JV-19-1107, the permanency file, then wouldn't the rule direct us to the petition in that case number?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. I think that so historically, and I think that things have developed in child protection practice, but the initial petition, the CHIPS petition, opens the placement, and the permanency proceedings are actually dispositional of the placement. Permanency proceedings only exist if a placement proceeding exists. There is a process at which a case can begin with a permanency proceeding, a placement can begin with a permanency proceeding. That is not the situation here. It happened with a CHIPS proceeding. And yes, I do believe the motions were filed in the 2019, which would be the permanency proceeding.
So if I could get back to Judge Gaitas's question, then are you saying that this rule is unambiguous or ambiguous?
I believe it's unambiguous because it is intended to be at the beginning of the proceedings and read with the rules as a whole. I believe that it's clear that permanency proceedings are a continual proceeding. The agency's obligations are tied to the placement, not to the litigation portions. The need for a separate permanency petition clearly balances out and makes creates an opportunity for the different interests that are at play in a permanency proceeding or permanency disposition relative to a CHIPS petition. But I believe that the rule itself clearly talks that is tied to the placement rather than to the proceeding.
Go ahead, Judge Bryan.
I was just going to ask you to tie that to the definition of the phrase juvenile protection matter at 2.0119, because that phrase refers to not just the initial CHIPS matter, but also the permanency matter. And, you know, there's a list of things. So if we don't have a definition of the word petition, but we do have a definition of the phrase juvenile protection matter, that would seem to cut against your analysis.
I would say, Judge, though, that a juvenile, that statute, and I don't have it in front of me, but I believe if I have it in mind correctly, that statute makes it clear that all of those different proceedings are juvenile protection proceedings. That's necessary, for example, 260C607 is now a juvenile protection proceeding. To a certain extent, the progress towards adoption proceedings used to be within the adoption proceedings of portions of the statute. So I think that that's what that statute is intended to mean, that where are things going to be, where are the different sort of phases of a child protection case going to be within the litigation portion of a case? When you think of, there's sort of three things that go on in a child protection case in court. There's oversight, compliance, and the litigation. And the use of the word petition and proceeding, the petitions can be different steps within the proceedings, but sometimes a particular proceeding can start with different petitions. So I think that in this particular proceeding, clearly the case began with the CHIPS petition. That's when the placement started. That's when the court's oversight responsibilities started. Regarding the placement.
Are those the same or different case numbers?
Excuse me, Judge?
Same case number or different case numbers?
They are different case numbers, but again, it's one placement and one set of obligations. I think that the focus on the case numbers and petitions has to do with who has party status, right to party status, things like that at different phases in a particular child protection case.
But isn't the rule? Go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you, Judge Gagetis. Isn't your position, though, contrary to the purposes of the juvenile protection rules and statutes to ensure that families are kept together and relatives are participating in the process?
None at all, Your Honor. I believe that as this particular case shows, not the speculative things outside this case that have come up, that came up in counsel's arguments here, but as this particular case shows, the department, the agency here under court oversight was engaged with the relatives, with the family members throughout this case. The children were placed with the relative. The department did engage in efforts to stabilize and make sure that placement continued and really met all of the needs and obligations to prioritize and look at relative placement. The statute requires consideration of placement with relatives, and the county clearly did that throughout this case. So I would respectfully disagree that the position in this particular case, but in general, has any negative impact on the duty to engage with relatives.
Thank you.
Judge Gaetis, did you have a question?
Well, we've kind of passed over what I was going to bring up, but I guess I'll go back there. In looking at just the position of Rule 34 in the context of all of the juvenile protection rules, I wonder if maybe, you know, given that it sounds like you're conceding it's ambiguous, and we're looking at things outside of just the plain language of the rule, does the position of that rule in the context of a lot of other general rules weigh against the argument that you're making that we should interpret it only as applying to the CHIPS petition?
If I'm following, Your Honor, I don't think so, respectfully. I think that, again, the juvenile protection rules are procedure rules, as well as the statutes, are somewhat unique in that it is balancing out those different things that go on in the child protection case. And looking in the juvenile protection procedure rules as a whole are attempting to get that balance by describing the overall proceedings as well as the different litigation interests. And so I do not think that the place in the rules or the particular development of that, the language in that rule, cuts against that concept. I think again, oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, and then, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about what you hadn't planned to talk about. I'm wondering if maybe before you complete your argument today, if you could address the discovery argument that is being made, that the grandmother did not have an opportunity to participate in discovery, and whether that is sufficient to establish prejudice?
I do not think it's sufficient to establish prejudice. And I would point out that the district court here had no opportunity to address that. It was not presented in that way. There were procedures agreed upon at the July 15th hearing. And the issue of discovery did not come up. So again, looking at this particular case, it's clear that the appellant here had an opportunity to be heard, had notice of what was going on, had an opportunity to engage, comporting with JLG regarding the rule out motion, was able to have a meaningful opportunity to contest the issues before the court. Appellant is setting up sort of a process here of moving targets. And part of what JLG says, it's our contention as well as this court's other cases, that there is an orderly progress. What the court is doing is overseeing the progress towards adoption when a child is under the guardianship of the Commissioner of Human Services, setting up discrete decision-making points as part of that process. There was that process here. The department, we contend here today that the judge was dealing appropriately with what was before her. As a result, there was no error and no prejudice on what was going on. If the rule out is legitimate, then the other issues are not before the district court as well as before this court. So again, we would encourage this court to look at what was before the district court and whether or not there was reversal necessary on the issues and the facts before it. I would also note again,
counsel, just turning to the issue that you started with, the appellant argues that the best interest factors apply and the district court failed to fully consider the best interest factors. And as you know, the health, safety, and best interest of the child is paramount in all juvenile protection proceedings. So given that, did the district court err in failing to expressly consider each of the best interest factors set forth in 260C.212 subdivision 2?
I would say no, Your Honor. The best interest factors are part of the placing decision. The best interest factors and placing decisions. The court's overall responsibility, if anything, in some ways, is not constrained by those best interest factors. The court needs to look at the best interests of the child in all decision making. And the court here did look at the best interest regarding the rule out decision, considered the facts before it regarding the children's time and placement, the children's needs, and whether or not it was in the children's best interest to rule out now appellant and therefore allow the case to move on to make further progress towards adoption. So there is also, I would note, in neither rule nor statute that I'm aware of any specific requirement for specific findings. Statutes, the juvenile protection statutes and rules have different places where specific findings are required, and I do not find that in anything regarding a rule out or indeed regarding the adoption placement process. My time has well expired. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions from the panel? All right. We have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to address the prejudice argument and point. I concede that looking back, there are things that I should have pushed the boundaries for more, but that's where I would say that the prejudice lies in this case. It was arbitrary whether the county and the judge were going to let my client cross-examine witnesses. It was arbitrary whether they were going to let her testify. It was arbitrary whether I could have, according to the county, asked for discovery, but that would have been me pushing the boundaries. The statute is very clear. It says that you don't have a right to discovery if you're not a party. And so I knew statutorily I had no right to make that request. And now the county wants to argue after the fact that, well, I didn't, which is true. I concede that I did not do that. And again, I argue that that is where this is arbitrary, and that's where the prejudice lies for my client.
Earlier you gave the example of medical information as something that would have been helpful to have if you had discovery, helpful for your client. But I don't know that that goes to the issues that were addressed in the rule out motion. Can you talk more specifically about how you were prejudiced or your client was prejudiced by not having discovery as it relates to the issues in the rule out motion?
Absolutely, Your Honor. So one of the allegations that was made by the social worker was that my client had disenrolled one of the children from programming for a year. Well, I can tell you in hindsight, because I have now seen discovery based on a different case for Ms. Hardin, that there was evidence behind the county's closed doors that shows that that allegation was not true. And there are allegations that she made decisions on behalf of the kids, therefore, that were not in their best interests. And we can prove that that's not the case. Furthermore, we can prove based on the record that the mom still had parental rights for a portion of that those decisions about the schools and education, and it was actually up to her and the county. So I now know in retrospect, they have accused my client of having done an action that was adverse to the children that actually was not up to her or her choice. So again, if we'd had all that broken down timeline, we did not know the individuals at the programming that she worked with. My client couldn't remember all the different individuals. And then, you know, after the fact, of course, in speaking with them, they were very positive towards her. They would have been excellent witnesses at this rule out motion hearing. The county presented exhibits during the rule out at the end that I didn't even know existed, that they didn't tell me they were going to present during the hearing. At one point, to impeach Ms. Hardin, they brought up that she had licensing violations, and I didn't know that she had those. And the county didn't tell me before the hearing that they had those, you know, in the pocket to pull up and ask her if she remembered them and then impeach her with it. So that would be another great example of discovery not used. The county also wants you to believe that the intervention and whatnot should be arbitrary. And that connects to this too, because MLS and the permissive intervention, of course, but the message from the courts was loud and clear that relatives should be included all along the way. And that's why I brought up the medical point, is that the reason for that over-inclusive policy towards relatives is that that would have been in that child's best interest in that medical regard. And then obviously for the discovery is another point. It also says the county says that in this case that they were supporting relatives because they gave grandma all these chances. They want to make that assertion. But when it mattered, they used a narrow construct of the statute regarding which petition in order to keep her out and have the advantage. And that's our complaint, of course, over and over again about the rule out and that procedure.
How about in relation to the court's finding that there was a pattern that grandmother had difficulty in providing adequate supervision and that as a result, they were in dangerous situations that did result in injury or could have easily resulted in serious injury. Is there any discovery related to that you would have done?
Yes. We did have part of the medical records that we brought up during the hearing, but we didn't have the medical records for each one of the incidences. And at least one of the medical records we were able to refer to and point out that the child was, quote, in no distress at the time that they were at the doc, by the time they made it to the doctor. So these children were very active children. They were injured in ways that even the county themselves never called abuse or neglect. They just called it, quote, supervision. But again, this is the same grandmother who the county approved as recently as September of 2020 to have that foster care license and to have the children placed with her. And so for them to make the arguments and allegations, another thing that that goes into is what happened after the children were removed. We would have also had access to that information. And my client knew just from being on the video Zooms, as she testified to, that the children had continued to get injured. And she saw more injuries in the short time that they were having Zoom meetings in new placements than happened all of the time with her. And that would have been great evidence, obviously, to be able to back up beyond just her word of testimony to show the court those injuries and medical records accordingly.
Thank you. Any other questions from the panel? Would you like to wrap up very briefly, Ms. Foreman-Spears?
Thank you, Your Honor. We're arguing that this court has made a trend towards including relatives and enforcing that the statute and case law say relatives are to be given priority. This grandmother, as the record shows, is the last familial resort for these kids. The arguments that the county makes for, quote, supervision issues are not enough to have terminated the parental rights of these children's parents if it had been in that case format. Instead, they were with their grandmother, who essentially became their parent, and her rights were terminated without proper procedure. And it is so important for the court to remember how much we rely in this process on what's set out in 260C with the motion for adoptive placement procedure. It is so clear. It is so helpful. It gives direction. It has the prima facie, all of those steps. That is very clear and reliable. And now the department has thrown in a wrench that helps them skip over that process, save themselves from what can sometimes be a 10 or more day trial, and rule out the grandmother while holding the cards and not letting her see what's behind them. And we need this court to uphold the intervention rights and reverse the district court's rule out so that she can proceed and challenge the adoptive placement with evidence and with an actual opportunity to have a fair trial. So thank you for the time today.
Thank you. The matter is submitted.